I'm Brandi Cruz, coming up today on Undivided. Who does your income belong to? Is it your property, or does the government have a claim to it? We'll discuss. Plus, the majority party in Washington state is backing away from yet another ill-advised tax as the predictable consequences of it become clear. And an Undivided exclusive, a bizarre school assignment that asked kids to basically decide what their political party was based on a series of leading questions. That and much more coming up today on Undivided. Remember, you can support our show for only $5 a month by signing up at undividedpod.com. That's undividedpod.com. Click on the banner that says support the show. Hello, hello, and welcome to Undivided. Thank you for being here. Thank you so much for your commitment to giving common sense a comeback. I'm Brandi Cruz. Wow, not often that we're coming on air and a story breaks. I'm going to talk about it a little bit. I'll get to another story because we are trying to get the video downloaded and stuff. But so Democrat in Olympia admitted that he was debating the budget drunk last night. Insane. And I saw this video. So we're talking about State Rep Joe Fitzgibbon, who just so happens that the first element of our story today is a video of Fitzgibbon from something else. I got a flurry of text messages last night, like around 10:30 p.m., with people saying, oh my gosh, oh my gosh, are you watching appropriations? Oh my gosh. And of course I wasn't, because I do have a life, contrary to public opinion. And some multiple people, both staffers and other lawmakers, were saying Joe Fitzgibbon appears to be drunk while talking about the state budget at a time when they're trying to make this massive decision, something he is driving to pass an income tax. And so I saw the video and I thought to myself, yeah, he looks and he sounds hammered. I mean, the only thing that made it sound normal was if I put it on fast forward. But if you listen to it on regular speed, it sounded very much like he was drunk. But yeah, I can't just come on the show and say, this dude is hammered. I'm not going to say that. I mean, maybe he was tired. Maybe he was on medication. Maybe something else was going on. So this morning I got in and Nicole and I were having a conversation about how do we go about giving him an opportunity, you know, to respond to these allegations that he was debating the budget drunk. And I said, well, you know, reach out to him for comment. I also was going to have a reach out to comment to the state rep who was sitting next to him. Like, if he was drunk, this guy surely smelled it on his breath. And so anyway, I just get, we're you know, leading up to showtime, trying to get this confirmed. And then our friend Jason Rantz with 770 at Seattle Red published minutes ago a blockbuster report saying that the House Majority Leader has admitted that he was drunk during the budget hearing last night. Absolutely insane. Nicole, do you have the video? Yeah, so here is the video last night of Fitzgibbon at the budget hearing.
I really want to thank you for your work on this budget. And I also want to say, I want to thank the members of the minority party for their amendments on this budget, which, you know, while they were mostly not accepted, I think reflect something important about our state, which is that members of the legislature, whether in the majority or minority party, hear from their constituents what needs are that they feel need to be met by their state government. You know, and most of those amendments were amendments to invest more in the people of our state.
And also look at
and while those
Larry
well, we're
Springer
not in a place right now where we can say yes to every investment in the people of our state, I think it really matters that we're hearing from members of both caucuses, both Democrats and Republicans, about what the people that they represent need. And the desire to see us invest more, whether that's in education, in workforce development, in higher education.
All right, Nicole, you can come away from this. I think we get the idea. He's slurring his words. There was also an accusation that, or I mean, I give Democrats credit that his own party tried to kind of get him out of there and, you know, weren't successful. And then he went on this long speech for 5 minutes. And I'm not going to play the whole thing, but it gets worse and worse and worse as it goes on. So again, our friend Jason Rantz was able to confirm this first. And he confirmed it by getting a statement from House Majority Leader Joe Fitzgibbon that he indeed had been drinking before that budget hearing. He told Jason in a statement, "I made a poor choice last night by drinking alcohol before we finished our work for the day. I am disappointed in myself and take responsibility for that poor choice. It won't happen again, and I'm committed to completing my work this session without alcohol." Yeah, one would hope. And look, you know, I don't know if he has issues with alcohol or something, but it's not like this hearing on the budget was a surprise. And so we certainly are going to try to get more information on where was he drinking? When was he drinking? Was there any driving involved? Was there any sort of work that was being done at the time? But credit to Jason Rance for getting. And you know what? I'm glad Joe Fitzgibbon admitted it. I'm glad he didn't make all of us go about trying to track down and prove that he had been drinking alcohol when it was very, very clear from the video that he, in fact, had been drinking. I mean, we all know what somebody looks like when they're drunk and slurring their speech and whatever it is. So again, during a critical budget hearing at a time when they're trying to pass an unconstitutional income tax on all of you, House Majority Leader Joe Fitzgibbon, who's been driving that conversation, admits that he was drunk during the budget hearing last night on this matter. So we'll certainly have more reaction to all of that. And maybe some of the state lawmakers who told us about this privately are now going to be willing to come out publicly and talk about their reactions to it now that he has admitted that that was in fact the case. So as I mentioned, I had already planned to talk about Joe Fitzgibbon today and how he's driving this conversation on the income tax. So I guess we'll just get to that. So back in December, there was news that started circulating about the fact that they were going to try to get an income tax by making it on millionaires initially. It's something that they'll eventually have applied to everyone. But central to them being able to get an income tax is the state Supreme Court ruling that income is not property, because our Constitution says if you want to tax property, then that tax has to be uniform against all classes of people, and it can only be at 1%. So, of course, based on that, and there was a state Supreme Court ruling in the 1930s that said, yes, income is property. So if income is property, then according to our state constitution, it has to be taxed uniformly. You can't single out millionaires and say we're going to tax them at 9.9%. It's blatantly unconstitutional. But back in December at a legislative preview, Joe Fitzgibbon said that he believes and he thinks that the ruling characterizing income as property is outdated.
I think we should be willing to have a tough conversation about that. I don't think we should shy away from it just because the Supreme Court in 1935 voted in a 5-4 decision based on a federal interpretation of income as property.
Yeah. So he thinks that it's outdated, goes back to the 1930s, although it has withstood for almost 100 years. The court has never decided in Washington state that, oh, income isn't property. And I think you are probably all thinking about that, what I am, which is if my income isn't my property, then who the hell's property is it, right? So Carlene Johnson of the Center Square, she and I were sitting next to each other at a Democratic leadership media availability earlier this week. And she got into this really fantastic back and forth with Senator Jamie Peterson about this idea, because they need this. They need the state Supreme Court for the first time in 90 years to rule that no, income isn't property, and therefore we can tax it however we please. Listen to this exchange.
Do legislators have a responsibility to propose bills that are constitutional, or is it your job to push that envelope?
So happily, the former Attorney General is not a member of the Supreme Court. And ultimately, it's 9 people on the Supreme Court who are going to make the decision about whether it's constitutional or not. Look, there was a decision in 1933 by 5-4 majority at a time when the income tax, the idea of income tax in our country, was only at the age of majority, 18 years since the federal income tax had started, when there was a lot of unsettledness about the nature of an income tax. In the law up to that time, there was an idea that there were essentially 2 kinds of taxes: property taxes, taxes on having something, owning it, and excise taxes, taxes on doing something, right?
Do people not own their income, though?
No, I think it is. No, they own the property. Once it has become income, this is not, if you think about it, I've been trying to think of good analogies to this. We sometimes have people who come into the United States, right? But they're not considered to have been in the United States because of the legal mechanism by which they got here, right? So there's a question about whether you're lawfully present. This is, it's just an immigration idea. This is maybe makes sense only to lawyers.
Wait, it doesn't make sense to anyone. Are you saying we're too dumb to understand the very stupid explanation that you gave when Carlene says, but isn't our income property? And he says, yes, but well, no. And then he starts to do a Gavin Newsom with his hands. Well, immigration, what does that have to do with anything? Let's just try that again.
Do people not own their income, though?
No, I think it is. No, they own the property once it has become income. This is not, if you think about it, I've been trying to think of good analogies to this. We sometimes have people who come into the United States, right? Uh-huh. But they're not considered to have been in the United States because of the, legal mechanism by which they got here, right? So there's a question about whether you're lawfully present. This is, it's just an immigration idea. This is maybe makes sense only to lawyers, but income is sort of the, it's this line at which somebody else's property becomes your property, right? That's
oh my God.
Income.
It's my bank and account is mine.
Well, that's right. And before it hits your bank account, it has money withheld out of it, right? That and is that so? Was your gross income your income, or was your net income your income?
It's all my income, okay? It's all my. What is the worse his explanation got, the more he used his hands. And then it was one of these, your income, my income. So I reset and I tried to ask that question in a different way to hopefully a sober State Rep. Joe Fitzgibbon.
The thing that's hard for people to hear is that their income isn't their property. And so, you know, if I were to cash my check and stash it away in my safe at home, whose property is that?
It's your property, I think. There's a legal distinction here between the limitation in the state constitution on how property taxation can happen and how other kinds of taxation can happen. So you might also say, when I... if I'm a business and I say, just to pick a business, say I'm a hospital and the income that they generate from the state of Washington or from insurance companies or from people paying cash, the B&O rate levied on that income is 1.5%. If their revenue were property, we couldn't levy a 1.5% B&O on them. It would have to be 1%. And that's established law that income by a business, their gross receipts, is not subject to the 1% cap on property taxation.
Right, because you said it's established law that business income is treated differently. What's not established law in Washington state is that our income isn't property. The established law right now, whether you like it or not, is that our income is our property. And therefore, if you're going to tax it, it must be uniform and it must be capped at 1%. So here's the thing. We get into these dishonest politics. Just say what you want to say. Just say what makes sense. Yeah, of course, Brandy, your income is your property, but we want to tax it. We want to be able to tax it. Okay, I don't want you to be able to tax it, but if you put it like that, then at least you're not pulling a Jamie Peterson and trying to come up with some sort of weird explanation as to how my income isn't my property. Of course, income is my property. Like I said, if I cash my check and I put it in my safe at home, whose property is it? It's my property. Let's not be stupid. Let's not be obtuse. Of course, it's my property. Just say, you want to be able to take some of my property. Just say it. And then we can go from there. And of course, the very best way to be able to do that legally is to pass a constitutional amendment. Not to circumvent the state constitution and go to your friends at the state Supreme Court and ask them to overturn 100 years of legal precedent. It's to say, okay, if we want to be able to tax income, we're gonna have to send a constitutional amendment to voters that says once and for all that income is not property and that we can have an income tax in Washington state. Why won't they do that? Because voters will reject it. And so they want to do it anyway, despite the fact that voters have rejected it 11 times. And so they're going to their buddies at the state Supreme Court to rule that income isn't property, even though that just makes no sense. Just crazy the extent to which they're willing to manipulate themselves. and manipulate words just to try to make what they're saying make sense. No, of course my income is my property. If you want a chunk of it, just say so. And then we can talk about how, legally speaking, that's feasible. We're all adults here. If you joined the show late, I just again want to revisit this. Just insane that House Majority Leader Joe Fitzgibbon is now admitting that he was drunk last night at a budget hearing about this very issue. Something so critical. Really, we're talking about the future of our state here with this proposed income tax on millionaires, and it'll be an income tax on everyone. One of the most important policy conversations that that's happened in Washington State probably in the last 10 years, and he shows up to the hearing on it drunk? Now, I'll give him credit for admitting it rather than making us all jump through hoops trying to figure out where he drank, how much he drank, who'll confirm he drank. He told Jason Rance in a statement, "I made a poor choice last night by drinking alcohol before we'd finished our work for the day. I'm disappointed in myself. I take responsibility for that poor choice. It won't happen again, and I'm committed to completing my work this session without alcohol." Look, sometimes when I go to Olympia, I'll admit I'd rather be drunk because it's so stupid what's happening. I'll tell you what, those hearings and those watching those bills pass would be a hell of a lot easier with a few glasses of champagne. But, you know, I'm a professional, and I would hope that the leader of the House for the Democratic Party who's driving these decisions also has the capacity to be a professional and to not show up drunk. And again, if you weren't with us at the very beginning of the show, this is just breaking. There'd been rumors overnight. My phone was blowing up from people saying that Joe Fitzgibbon was absolutely intoxicated during the budget hearing. Hard thing to prove unless he admits it. And he's admitted it, that indeed he had been drinking. So I wonder what else he was doing drinking yesterday. I'm sure that story will, and let's see how the media treats it. That's my other question. Jason Rance is the first one to break it. Let's see how the Seattle Times treats it. Let's see how King, Cairo, Como, Fox 13 treat it. Because I know how they'd treat it if it was a Republican who showed up drunk. So let's hope that the House leader for Democrats gets the same treatment as well. All right, speaking of this taxation issue, look, sometimes I think for all of us, we do something, we try something, and it doesn't work, and we change our mind. And I think that we should always leave grace for that. You know, that was always my hope during the pandemic. And this is one of my red pillings, is that, you know, I was sort of on board for the first couple months, and then they wouldn't change their mind when presented with new information. Like on the vaccines just weren't what they said they were going to be, wasn't what we were all expecting. And Jay Inslee still wouldn't back away from the vaccine mandates. And people were still losing their job over a vaccine that wasn't what they promised it would be. You know, masking as well. We're sitting here in restaurants eating like, oh, taking our masks down to take a bite of food and putting it back up. And it's just the stupidest thing. And so I really lose trust and faith in people if even when presented with new information, they cannot admit that they were wrong and back away. And Democrats have proven incapable of doing that on the taxation issue. So you'll recall that, well, at least on the income taxation issue, because there's a couple taxes that passed last year. And all of us warned them what would happen if they passed these taxes, warned them about the potential negative consequences. And at the time, they didn't listen. And now a year has gone by and they're realizing that what they were warned about is coming to fruition. And again, I'll give them credit here. They seem perfectly capable of backing away from some of these tax proposals now that it's become clear that they have negative consequences. Yet they're still repeating stupid by pursuing the income tax when we have all these very obvious warnings that it'll lead to capital flight. And they're like, nah, we'll try it. So we told the story last week about Democrats considering a retreat on the estate tax, fearing a wealth exodus. So remember, last year they made this the most expensive state in the union to die in. And I think the lifted the top threshold for estate tax up to 35%. So the government's going to take 35% of your estate if you dare die here with wealth. And of course, any person with common sense knew what would happen. People would pick up and leave. Where I live, there's a neighborhood with all the big, massive homes. And they never go up for sale. This is like old money stuff. It's not in my neighborhood. It's in the town. I don't live in the old money neighborhood. It's like on the hill. I just look at it, right? They never go up for sale. After this passed last year, 7 went up for sale almost overnight. And I was talking to Wes Jones, our real estate guy, and he said, I guarantee that's people escaping the estate tax while they still can. He said, I guarantee a lot of people who live in those homes are older, they have a large estate, and they don't want to leave 35% of it to the government. They want to leave it to their kids and their grandkids. And that made a lot of sense. And so Democrats you know, what everybody warned them about came true. And so they said, okay, maybe we don't want to be the most expensive state in the union to die in. There's another example of this from the Washington State Standard. Unpopular aircraft tax taxis toward a rollback in Olympia. A luxury aircraft tax Washington lawmakers passed in 2025 encountered turbulence from upset members of the state's aviation sector. Oh, I love the wording there. Isn't that fun? Said an impending tax in Washington state targeting private jets could be grounded just days before its scheduled takeoff. The democratically controlled Washington legislature approved the new luxury tax last spring. State Senator Mark Olias, a Democrat from Edmonds who sponsored the tax, is now in the unusual position of trying to repeal his own prior policy. A separate repeal effort is gaining altitude. Okay, I've had enough of the puns, okay? I get it. Is gaining altitude in the state house. The tax would levy a 10% surtax on the sale, lease, or transfer of a private aircraft valued at more than $500,000. The threshold covers a range of business planes and helicopters. Commercial airliners and interstate cargo transporters are exempt. While the policy fits with Democrats' desire to make millionaires pay more, it generated enough business blowback to force a course correction. Leas explained his change of heart by noting the vigorous opposition to the new tax that emerged, including from tenants at a major airport in his own district, Payne Field. Leas said Monday, "We want every part of the transportation system contributing, but we also want to do that in a rational and smart way. The arguments that the folks made about the unintended consequences were compelling enough to me that we're switching." So again, I want to applaud that and say, hey, at least Mark Olias can back away from his own bad policy before it takes effect. But they told Mark Olias these concerns while they were debating it. Payne Field and all these carriers, they didn't just stay quiet and let the tax pass. No, they went to Olympia. They made these arguments. They told him what would happen if they passed this tax. And a year later, that's exactly what happened. And now he's saying, oh, now I believe you. Now I believe you and we'll do something about it. So why can't they apply that same logic to the income tax on millionaires? People are saying, even millionaires, they're saying, Zach Abraham with Bulwer Capital told us if they pass the millionaires tax, he will leave the state or he'll find a way to re-domicile so he never has to pay it. In California, now that they're considering this one-time tax on billionaires, what's happening? They've seen a huge exodus of billionaires, a ton of wealth from their state that brings in revenue. So if you take the same logic that Democrats are now being forced to apply to this aircraft tax and to the wealth tax, couldn't we just avoid the inevitable and say, hey, every time we do this, the consequence people told us would arises very quickly. So let's believe them when they tell us that the millionaire's tax will have the same effect and let's just table it. But they're not going to do it. They're going to do it. And then what all of us warned them would happen, the millionaires will leave. And then they'll say, well, the millionaires left. So now we're going to have an income tax on all of you. It's just inevitable. But they can learn from these lessons, but they can't head off a mistake before it happens. Very strange. All right, we'll get to an exclusive on Undivided, a bizarre civics assignment at Ferndale High School. It's a real head scratcher. First, if you're thinking about leaving the state of Washington, maybe to escape the wealth tax or the impending income tax, reach out to our friend Wes Jones at sellwithwes.com. Wes has been doing this for a long time. He's been through all the market ups and downs, and he knows what the market demands of home sellers at any given time. You know, there are periods of time where, hell, you can throw anything on the market and it'll just fly off. Not right now. You do have to put in a little bit of work, and sometimes that can mean some cosmetic upgrades. One of the great things Wes does for his clients, significantly improved their outcomes. He's been doing it for about 10 years. They do a pre-listing inspection. Every listing he sells is pre-inspected. So that means that any sort of issues that could pop up at the end and derail a sale or draw things out, Wes is figuring it out at the beginning, before things even start. He can come in, he can help out with those issues, help make cosmetic upgrades, arrange so you don't have to pay for those things until closing. And it's just smart. And when you think about it, really all real estate agents should do that. Because, I mean, Miranda just bought a home in Miami, and one of the like heart-stopping moments as you get through it, you think you're about to buy or to sell, and then issues pop up because it hasn't been pre-inspected. So just one of the many great services Wes and his team offer. So sellwithwes.com, sellwithwes.com. It really just is a better way to sell your home. This is insane. So this story takes us to Ferndale High School. What is going on up there? First, it's Burlington. Now it's Ferndale.
creeping north.
You think you can get your kids out of Seattle public schools and insanity is not going to be pushed on them? Apparently you're wrong. So this was an assignment in an 11th grade civics class. And I still am really confused about the purpose of it in general. It seems like they're trying to help kids understand what political party they might belong to, which maybe there is some benefit in helping kids understand, by and large, what Republicans stand for versus what Democrats stand for. But the way they did it is insane. Crazy. So it says, directions. The following words describe certain political beliefs in the United States today. Try and see if you can match the following political views with the correct political party. So it says R for Republican. You put an R for Republican, or you put a D if it's a political position usually held by the Democrat Party. And then it asks the students to put an X on the right side if they support that statement. So it's like you're going to label it R or D, and then you're going to say, this is the part I don't understand. I'm fine with maybe the labeling of the R or the D, but then you want these kids to commit to, do you hold this political position, in their 11th graders? But look at how leading these questions are. So a couple examples we'll pull out. D or R wants to overturn and get rid of Obamacare. And then in parentheses, don't want no socialized medicine. Opposes gun regulations. Parentheses, don't want no one touching my gun. Wants American exceptionalism taught in public schools. Parentheses, America is and has always been the greatest country in the world. Wants to rebuild American military strength. More guns, planes, ships, and men. MAGA. And then look at what's in the parentheses for a question about like a left-leaning ideology. Supports LGBTQ rights. Parentheses, supports non-binary and transgender equality. I mean, oh my God. And then here's some more. Is pro-life. Abortion is murder. Wants to deport all illegal immigrants. Border security over anything else! Exclamation point. And then it has, again, an example of how they refer to left-leaning policies. Believes in reducing greenhouse gas emissions. Climate change is real, is in parentheses. You notice how only in the Republican ones do they use poor grammar and say, me no like you. Like, it's absolutely insane. Let's see. Goes on. Wants to eliminate all DEI, wants to put more money into social programs. So whenever they list an idea that you know a D is going to go next to, they explain it in a very matter-of-fact way, put in the parentheses, use good grammar. But when it's a policy that they're going to put an R next to, don't want no socialized medicine. Don't pay for college. Don't want no one touching my gun. Murka has always been the greatest country in the world. MAGA. I mean, that's insane.
Gee, I wonder where their teacher stands.
Well, yeah, I wonder what their teacher's political philosophy is. And I wonder what they're trying to do to the minds of kids. Like, oh, people who hold these positions are stupid. Mm-hmm. People who hold these positions are inbred MAGA morons. And we've reached out to the school district up in Ferndale to ask, one, is this an approved part of the curriculum? And even if it is, something tells me that those parentheses were probably added by the teacher to basically push kids toward a certain political opinion, because they don't want to say yes to the one with the bad grammar. Don't want no one touching my gun. I mean, it's laughable. It's absolutely insane. And this is happening in Ferndale. There he is, buried deep in there. There's a good civics lesson. Buried deep in there about what party, you know, prefers this, what ideology prefers this versus prefers this. I'm okay with kids graduating high school knowing generally what the Democratic Party platform is, what the Republican Party platform is, what constitutes a conservative, what constitutes a liberal, the difference between progressive and liberal. I'm okay with all of that. But when you inject your own personal beliefs and essentially try to sway a child who's almost at voting age, reminder, these are probably 16, 17 year olds, about at voting age, that, oh, Republicans are idiots and they don't know how to speak, they have bad grammar and they can't spell. trying to create the future Democratic voters of America. Nicole?
Yeah, no, I just think that the person that shared this with their parent said, that's weird.
They took a picture. A student took a picture of it, right? Sent it to their parent saying, well, this is weird.
Right. That's weird. But really, the parent was then like, no, that's wrong. And that's the thing, that these kids don't even realize that this is happening to them. And I heard from some other parents that were saying they were now investigating what kids knew about ICE and what kids knew about immigration and Donald Trump and all of this, because a lot of people, typically on the right, tend to shield their kids from this kind of drama and this kind of child, or like, they want them to have simple childhoods and not worry about this kind of thing. And so then they go to school and somebody beats them to it.
Yes.
So it's a good reminder to hurry up, talk to your kids about it in a age-appropriate way, I guess. But we got to stop shielding them, because the schools are getting to them before you do then.
100%. And we have to know, and I added one thing under this, if you could take a look at the updated sheet when you get a second. 100%. And this is always what we hear from parents is, once they hear these stories, they're like, okay, is that stuff going home to my kid? Is my kid getting indoctrinated in this way? And a really important part of, I think, our job is letting parents know what's happening in schools. And I have something I want to update you guys on today, because I was going through this right before the show started today. So if we can't expose what's happening in schools, then parents are left in the dark. And sometimes we have to expose things that are happening in schools that are very difficult to talk about or difficult to watch. And the extent to which we're able to share those things on social media makes a big difference. So this morning I got a notice from Facebook that our video showing that brutal assault of a 13-year-old girl in the Burlington School District had been removed, and that our Facebook page has been restricted as a result. And I mean, this is upsetting in a number of ways. It's upsetting as a business owner, because we rely on social media for revenue. And if our pages are restricted and we can't get our show out there and we can't get our message out there, it absolutely hurts us from a business perspective. But it's also frustrating because the video has been just fully taken down. And Facebook is not the only platform to do that. So the only platform that let us share that video, which I admit, in which I gave the caveat, and there was a graphic content warning at the beginning of it, it's really hard to watch. But that doesn't mean that it shouldn't be shared with the public. And the only platform that has not restricted it in any form or fashion is X. And thank God Elon Musk bought Twitter and turned it into X, because we already know Twitter would have taken the video down. But on YouTube, they demonetized it when we put it up, and they also restricted it to people over the age of 18. And whenever they do that, the algorithm doesn't like it. And you can tell by the numbers. I mean, on X, it's been viewed 2 million times on X alone. 2 million times on X alone. It was shared widely. And then on YouTube, it's been viewed a couple thousand times, because they restricted it so much because the content. And then on Facebook, it was up all week. I imagine someone reported it. Facebook did an AI sort of overview of it and decided that it violated their rules on harassment and bullying, which I read the rules and I thought, well, this video isn't intended to harass or bully. It's intended to bring attention to it. So I don't believe that it violates their rules. I requested a manual review of the video this morning, and they upheld their decision. And so then I had to go do a full user appeal. They have something called a Facebook oversight board that was started post-2020 after Zuckerberg admitted that, yes, we were basically hurting conservative content in 2020. And we did that to things maybe we shouldn't have done. And so we'll see if my appeal is taken up by the Facebook oversight board. So one, I don't think it violates their rules. But two, if it does violate their rules should be changed. Because in order for us to share what's happening in schools, sometimes that's going to involve videos of minors. Sometimes it's going to involve situations with minors that include physical violence. A couple of the other videos that we've had either demonetized or restricted in some way in recent days have been the videos of the juveniles assaulting people during these anti-ICE walkouts, which we know has led to criminal charges and investigations. But, you know, these channels don't like, and there's a part of me that gets it, the channels don't like depictions of violence when it comes to youth. But what happens when our youth are being violent? And in the case of what happened in Burlington, these were two girls who allegedly beat up another girl because of her perceived political views, because they thought she supported Donald Trump and ICE. And, you know, there's a criminal investigation, potential charges, and all of these things. So it's a newsworthy event. It's something that the public and parents deserve to know about. And frankly, had we not posted the video, I don't think anything. I think those girls would have been back at school today. Had we not gotten the attention and shown that difficult to watch video to the public, I don't believe the principal would have eventually, 5 days later, picked right after we emailed them for comment, picked up the phone and finally called the mom. I don't believe the school district would have yesterday posted a job opening for additional security for the middle school where this happened. And I don't believe that at least one of the girls would be facing some serious criminal charges. So in order for us to actually show the truth of what's happening in public schools, we need to have some latitude to post videos of newsworthy events showing a crime, even if it's perpetrated by minors against minors. And so I hope that the oversight board at Facebook takes up this. It's essentially a case. There's a board that will decide which cases to take. I submitted a lengthy sort of explanation as to why I think it's in the public interest that Facebook allows videos like that. Like, look, if you're just posting a video of kids fighting for no newsworthy reason or whatever it is, then that's a different situation. But we were doing it here to raise awareness for what happened to this young girl, and we did, and it's a newsworthy event. So I just wanted to let you know, if you've seen that that video was removed from Facebook, that happened this morning, our appeal was denied, and now potentially it heads to the oversight board. All right, coming up next, the city of Tacoma unanimously approves funding, taxpayer funds, for HIV and STI testing for LGBTQ youth, which you might not on its face find a problem with, but it's the organization that's getting that money that is the real problem. We'll talk about it in our segment, Unbelievable. First, a couple days left in the month of February, and our friends at Valentine Roofing for the entire month of February are extending their customer referral program. So when you refer friends or family for a new roof or siding this month, you'll earn your choice of a free maintenance service or a $250 gift card, which I think is pretty cool. And as you know, you can be confident when referring your loved ones because every Valentine customer receives the Valentine experience. And I can attest to this: seamless communication, meticulous cleanup, extra mile service, even in the winter weather. And, you know, if you need to replace your roof, that can be a big expense for a homeowner, but they have very flexible financing options available as low as $159 a month for payments, zero down. So a Valentine roof is a roof built around your budget. So if you've already gotten a service from Valentine, be sure to refer a friend so they can cash in on a referral bonus, or so you can cash in rather on a referral bonus. And then always make sure you tell them that you heard about them right here on Undivided. All right, with that, let's get to our segment, Unbelievable. As if every segment on this show couldn't be called Unbelievable. Okay, all these cities in financial turmoil, yet they always find something woke to spend your money on. The city of Tacoma has unanimously approved funding for HIV and STI testing for LGBTQ youth. So they're taking $30,000 from the council's contingency fund, which really, is that what the contingency fund is for? There are a million nonprofits kids can go to, and LGBTQ or not. Why is it for just LGBTQ? Can straight kids not get STIs and HIV? Well, HIV, but STIs? I know there are certain populations more susceptible to the transition, a transfer of HIV, but STIs, any kid can get an STI if they're engaged in irresponsible intercourse. But this is just for LGBTQ youth, and it's the money is going to an organization called the Oasis Youth Center, and they can use it to expand access to on-demand, staff-guided HIV and STI testing for LGBTQ youth ages 14 and older in Pierce County. This is a disturbing quote. Council member at large Christina Walker and Olga Diaz co-sponsored it, and it was prime sponsored by Sarah Rumbaugh, who said this: "This effort is about making sure young people don't have to navigate their health alone." Gee, who could help make sure that young people don't have to navigate their health alone? Can you think of anyone besides Oasis Youth Center and the government? Gee, I'm really, you know, I'm digging deep, but I can't think of a single person who could help a young person make sure that they don't have to navigate their health alone. So about Oasis Youth Center, it says it's the only LGBTQ plus youth organization in Pierce County. The mission: Oasis transforms the lives of queer and questioning youth by creating a safe place to learn, connect, and thrive. The vision is a world in which queer youth are valued in the community as strong, creative leaders. Okay, fine. This is not the first time you've heard about the Oasis Youth Center. However, we've done a couple stories that featured Oasis Youth Center in a very negative light. And I'm very concerned about the government basically giving your money to them to continue this kind of work. For example, there was a queer prom at Pacific Lutheran University. And look, if you're going to Pacific Lutheran University, you're an adult. So who really cares if they have a queer prom? Well, it's because they invited kids, children, to come to the queer prom where adults were going to be. It says queer prom is an annual opportunity for LGBTQ plus and allied youth ages 14 to 24 to come experience queer joy and engage with community resources. The event is hosted by, you guessed it, OASIS, in partnership with Pacific Lutheran University. And here was the reason we did the story initially. So it was about you could come, exciting prizes, drug and alcohol-free environment, free HIV testing. So here you have a situation where you're having a prom where you can have gay college kids who mingle with gay 14-year-olds and they all get free HIV testing together. Isn't that weird to you? It's very strange to me. And that's why we covered that story at the time. But there was also, more recently, a even more concerning connection OASIS Youth Center had with a story we did. Remember the story of Eleanor? Eleanor is a 16-year-old who's been missing now for 3 months. She went to the Puyallup School District. The Puyallup School District indoctrinated her in radical gender ideology and ended up sending her to, unbeknownst to her parents, OASIS Youth Center, where young queer youth thrive. And what happened there? OASIS Youth Center connected her to a taxpayer-funded law firm, Team Child, which helped her seek different guardianship, which helped her be placed temporarily, despite no evidence of abuse from her family, with a homeless outreach advocate who she'd met on the streets one of the many times she ran away from home. Missing now for 3 months, all because the Puyallup School District, OASIS Youth Center, Team Child all thought, well, your parents, don't even tell them because your parents won't confirm that your gender identity and that you really are Elliot, not Eleanor. And now she's God knows where, with God knows who, away from a loving family that never abused her a day in their lives. And OASIS Youth Center was part of that. OASIS Youth Center exists to create a safe space for gay and questioning youth, queer and questioning youth. No, it's about basically putting it in these kids' heads that their families won't respect them, their families won't support them, and that this is a tool to take these kids even further and further away from their families. And I go back to that quote from the Pierce or Tacoma City Council member about why they need to give $30,000 from the council contingency fund to free HIV and STI testing so that these kids can go to a college queer prom and get HIV testing around 24-year-olds. She says the effort is about making sure young people don't have to navigate their health alone. The assumption is that if a kid is queer or thinks they're trans, then their parents cannot help them navigate their own health care. They can't be trusted to do it. So we in the government must step in. OASIS Center must step in. And if it comes down to a Team Child, a taxpayer-funded law firm must step in and rip that child out of a loving home. And your tax money is being used to do it. Gosh, don't you love the government taking our money to use it against us? Unbelievable. We'll get to national news coming up next. Zohran Mamdani wants to spend a lot of money on communist grocery stores. First, could the future, I don't know why I said communist like that, a communist grocery store, could the future of AI impact your retirement? Are you overwhelmed with all the noise around AI, crypto, tech, layoffs? What's going on? Economy is going to implode. If you are concerned, even in the slightest, you can get a free second opinion on your retirement investments with our friends at Bulwark Capital using their free Know Your Risk portfolio review. And Bulwark is totally focused on risk management, built around the fundamentals of value investing. Always looking for opportunities to lower risk, lower cost, and give your retirement as much upside as possible. So why not get a second opinion? It doesn't cost a thing. Schedule your Know Your Risk portfolio review today at knowyourriskpodcast.com. Plus, unlike other wealth management firms, you can get market updates every single day from Zach Abraham on his Know Your Risk podcast. Just search Know Your Risk podcast on YouTube and all other social media platforms and go to knowyourriskpodcast.com. And also tonight, I'll have a new new episode of Swamp Watch with our friend Zach Abraham, recapping some of the economic conversation during the State of the Union. So make sure to catch that. All right, a little bit of national news before we get to Florida report. Mom, Donnie's going to the White House again today.
Already did.
I
have a graphic.
Came and left. Oh my gosh. Are him and Trump going to become best friends?
I don't know.
Zohran said, I had a productive meeting with President Trump this afternoon. I'm looking forward to building more housing in New York City. Weird. And they have up these fake newspapers. Are they real newspapers?
I don't really know.
It's Trump to city, let's build. And then has this old thing with Ford to city, drop dead. Vows he'll veto any. I don't know what that is. I guess I have to get some context. But is Donald Trump, maybe it's a keep your enemies closer type thing.
I'm assuming.
I mean, Donald can get along with anyone. And he likes sort of, how do I put it? He likes winners, okay? Mm-hmm. And Zohran won, you know? And I think he likes interesting people. And I guess Zohran is sort of interesting.
I almost think that he just loves the city so much, he's willing to do anything to save it.
Let's go with that. But Zohran also likes very communist ideas like city-run grocery stores. Now, he's about to make a big investment in them. But just as a reminder, last week, he was threatening everyone with higher taxes and claiming they were in a financial crisis.
I know that for those who have watched budget after budget, it is tempting to assume that we are engaging in the same dance as our predecessors. Let me assure you, nothing about this is typical. If we do not fix this structural imbalance and do not heed the calls of New Yorkers to raise taxes on the wealthy, this crisis will not disappear. It will simply return year after year, forcing harder and harsher choices each time. Faced with no other choice, the city would have to exercise the only revenue lever fully within our own control. We would have to raise property taxes. We would also be forced to raid our reserves. To balance the budget as required by law, our preliminary budget takes the only path within our control, the second path. The options of the second path are the options of last resort. Options that we will only employ if there is no other means of arriving at a balanced budget.
I mean, doom and gloom. Oh my God, things are horrible. But not so horrible that we can't spend $70 million on the failed experiment of government-run grocery stores. This from the New York Post. Zohran wants to drop $70 million on city-run grocery stores as he claims NYC is broke. They're citing sources on this plan, saying that he's proposing, they call him His Honor. His Honor is proposing the new funding for the City Economic Development Corporation to scout potential locations for and build the 5 stores he's pledged to open in each borough, according to sources who reviewed preliminary budget documents. One city source was galled at the idea that the city would move forward with funding the grocery store plan, all while the mayor is sounding the alarm about a $5.4 billion budget gap. Doesn't that sound familiar, though? They always want to complain about, oh my God, we have no money, but let's give $4 million to a doctor to perform gender surgeries on prison inmates. We have no money. We have to tax you more, but let's drop $70 million on something that has never worked, a government-run grocery store. And then also, him and AOC had this joint video where AOC was speaking in Spanish, offering free daycare to the children of illegal aliens. So, oh my gosh, doom and gloom, but free daycare for illegals, city-run grocery stores, it's ridiculous. All right, it is Thursday, and every Thursday, because we get so depressed listening to what's happening in Washington State, we check in on what's happening in this sunshine state. It is our segment, Florida Report.
It's not even controversial anymore.
People know in Florida their freedoms are going to be respected.
Miranda, hello.
Hello.
Big fight in Florida over, I think a lot of it centers around probably teachers unions, but other public sector unions as well. So my understanding of this bill weaving its way through the state legislature in Florida is it would change sort of the threshold required for a union to even be formed or to stay a union, a public sector union, correct?
Yeah, it kind of tightens it up a little bit. Yeah. And I think it's an effort to make sure that all teachers that are teaching in Florida are being represented through the unions, because the unions do directly affect their pay and different representations of being a teacher. So it would change the voting threshold. So saying that the bill would require a majority of all employees in the bargaining unit, not just a majority of those who vote to approve for union certification and recertification.
Yeah, what's interesting about that, so basically let's just say that they're going to vote or going to form this public sector union. So right now it's a majority of actual ballots cast, when it would have to be, it would have to take into consideration even people who would be affected by that union in its bargaining, but who decided not to cast a ballot. And kind of what's interesting about that is it would make not casting a ballot sort of a de facto no vote. And yeah, one of the arguments the teachers' unions have made, which I don't know, I might agree with a little bit, is that, you know, the politicians who are pushing this, you know, they were elected based on people who cast ballots, not yeah, like, you know, people who didn't vote. I understand it's a little bit different, but it definitely is sort of an effort. Well, let's be honest about what it is. It's an effort to sort of dissuade public sector unions from forming.
Yeah, I think it is an effort to stop them from forming to begin with. I mean, and this is another, you know, line in this would be something that I think would kind of really affect some of your teachers' unions out there, where it would prohibit them from using paid leave for certain union activities,
yeah,
like lobbying or political campaigning.
Yeah. Well, because taxpayers are paying for their leave, right?
Yeah.
Now, to me, do I have to play devil's advocate today? Like, if you have a certain number of days of paid leave, use them for whatever you want, right? I mean, if you want to take yeah, vacation, I don't know how they bundle it together. If it's sick leave, if you really want to spend a day down in, you know, at the Capitol, that's how you want to spend your paid leave. I'm sort of like, okay, you do you.
That's true when you think about it like that, because, you know, it's your free time and you get it when you sign up for the job. You get so much paid mm-hmm, leave. You can do whatever you want with it.
Yeah.
But then inevitably somebody's going to get sick. So, you know, the burden of the absences beyond that still lie on the teachers to cover those
right,
spaces. I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah. And then the other interesting thing about this bill is it excludes these requirements for public safety unions, which, of course, tend to be a little more conservative, although firefighters lately have gone off the deep end in Washington state, like super liberal. It's so weird. But, you know, like police unions tend to vote for Republicans and support Republican ideas. So I do think it's a little odd to exclude them from the kind of restrictions that you're placing on other public sector unions. It seems a lot like picking and choosing.
It does. And I, you know, I can't help but to think this comes specifically because of the issues with the ICE walkouts and the mm-hmm, public displays of support for those with the students, and our state being highly against
yeah,
that. So,
yeah, but one more thing I'll just say about the voting requirement. I understand it in the sense that, let's say you have like a group of fringe weirdos that want to start like a public sector union or something like that, and they cast their ballots to vote, and like 100% of them, but like most of the people who would be affected by it, that them there being a union, decided like we're not even interested in voting. I understand it. It's just maybe I think it needs a little bit more tweaking to make sense. All right. God, we didn't even talk about this when it happened because it was just so ridiculous. But Congressman Randy Fine of Florida, he put out this post on X, which was pretty widely panned. He said, if they force us to choose, the choice between dogs and Muslims is not a difficult one.
Yeah.
Okay. So I was sort of like, well, who's forcing you to choose between dogs and Muslims? It was just a weird thing. But, you know, there was this, for instance, this Daily Mail article. Famous Palestinian activist calls for dogs to be banned as indoor pets in New York City because they are un-Islamic. And so now he is actually putting forward a proposal about this if we're ever forced to choose for some reason between dogs and Muslims.
Yeah, so this bill would prohibit federal funds from being provided to any state or local government that bans dogs as pets. Basically saying that Islamic law cannot be forced on the United States of America. It's a right of all Americans to own a dog.
Yeah, it's called the Protecting Puppies from Sharia Act. It says it was filed in response to comments from an advisor to Zohran Mamdani, the ones that I just said. And then I love his little don't tread on me sign. Don't tread on me. I'm just a doggy. So, yeah, I mean, I'll be honest. So if he says if they force us to choose the choice between dogs and Muslims, it's not a difficult one. The choice between dogs and really any class of people is not a difficult one. It's not just literally if somebody tries to force me to choose between my dog and them, unless it's my husband or maybe you or Nicole or a friend or family member, I'm choosing my dog, obviously. So
for sure, yeah. I would choose my rabbits, and I've put them above my health. Our family's been dealing with that for years.
Yeah.
You know, we love our animals. What do you want from us?
Yeah, nobody's taking my dog away from me over my dead body. All right, Ron DeSantis is helping Florida as part of a national celebration about America's 250th birthday. Make sure that the state never forgets its history and its heritage. So talk about how he's doing that.
Yeah, so he's been going kind of on a tour around the state leading up to the July 4th of this year, unveiling statues of not just former presidents, but historic people that have just, you know, etched their way into American history. So he just this week unveiled a statue of Frederick Douglass.
Okay.
And I love it. And alongside that, he did one of George Washington that he put in the state capitol. And then also James Monroe, who was pivotal in securing Florida as a territory and then later on down the road a state. And there's more to come, but this is where he's at right now.
Here's DeSantis at one of these events.
We are just in the Florida Keys for Monroe County, and we did James Monroe. We did a nice statue there. He was basically responsible for bringing Florida into the United States of America as a territory, and eventually paved the way for us to become a state later in the 1840s. So we've done that, and we've done a lot of different things. But one of the things we've said is it's not just about people that signed the Declaration of Independence or people that helped create the Constitution the following decade. We want to honor Americans throughout history who've exemplified that spirit of 1776 and those timeless ideals that are so meaningful even here today.
And of course, this comes after, I think, since 2020, there's been this period of time where states are just allowing angry citizens to erase aspects of American history and to tear down statues and all of these things. He's like, we're not tearing them down, we're putting them up. And it's like, even George Washington, people on the left just freak out about George Washington. It's like, man, get a grip.
Get a grip. I love it. I love seeing statues. I love reading the little plaques when I go to different towns, and you learn something, and whether you agree with what you learn or not, it's American history. You can't erase that.
Yeah, 100%. So love that. Love that for him and just helping people. Yeah, and you're a kid and you go town to town, like you said, and you read the plaques on statues and you learn about America and you learn about history, the good, but the bad and the ugly. It's a good thing. So, all right, Miranda, thank you so much.
You're so welcome.
It's not even controversial anymore.
People know in Florida their freedoms are going to be respected.
Meow. Yeah, get the statues up. At least put so many of them up that if the left ever decides to tear them down en masse, it'll just be a much taller task for them to do. All right, coming up next, we'll go to our subscriber show poll and comments from the live stream. First, Undivided has helped thousands. First Mark Insurance has helped. Well, actually, we have. Undivided has helped thousands of Washington families find First Mark Insurance. FirstMarkInsurance.com, FirstMarkInsurance.com. But First Mark has helped thousands and thousands of Washington families successfully manage the complicated world of insurance and save them thousands of dollars in the process. They do the same for local businesses too, along with finding your best price. Being a local company means First Mark has boots on the ground to evaluate your needs as a business accurately and be there with service you can count on. And we love having First Mark. I use First Mark for the business and for our personal insurance at home. And it's just been such the stress that they take off our plate by making sure that they're constantly updating things and checking in is just fantastic. So you can be the next First Mark Challenge victory by taking the First Mark Challenge now. It's free, like Robin, Carol, Debbie, and Connie. Connie tells us, I'm very impressed with First Mark. I learned about them through watching Brandy on Facebook. Well, let's hope you can still watch me on Facebook after I got dinged today. And I was looking for a different car insurance company, so I made the call. I received an email from Chase, and he was able to save me a considerable amount of money on my car insurance. He's very easy to work with. No high-pressure sales ever. I would recommend First Mark to my family and friends. In fact, I already have. I love it. So take the First Mark Challenge today. FirstMarkInsurance.com. FirstMarkInsurance.com. The very best part is they work for you, not the insurance companies. They always have your best interest in mind. All right. Our subscriber show poll today, I was thinking about this because I know these two girls who assaulted that 13-year-old in Burlington. There is plans right now for them to go back to school. Do we know a date? Have you talked to the victim's mother about what she's been told?
I actually just heard this morning it was pushed back again.
Pushed back again, okay.
But not as of now, they're still coming back. But.
Yeah, well, and they're trying to hire this additional security guard. Mm-hmm. We had the job posting that we put on the show yesterday. But I asked you guys about this. Do you believe a student should automatically face permanent suspension if they assault another student or faculty member? So should they just have to go to a different school? Like, once you assault someone at the school, is it one strike and you're out? Nicole, yes or no?
Yes. I mean, I agree with the statement, all kids have a right to education, but there are lots of different places you can get that education. Yeah. And once you've endangered someone, I think you're done.
Well, because it's not fair.
Correct.
Sorry, talk for a second while I clear my...
It's not fair to the victim who was attacked that she has to go to school. And even if there is a plan in place to keep them somewhat separate, you have to worry about every time you turn the corner if somebody's, you know.
Sorry. Okay, I'm fine. No, I'm fine.
She tried to mute it, but yeah, she has to worry. She said she's going to worry about if there's somebody behind her, if there's somebody in the classroom she's walking in. I mean, you're always on edge.
Right. You've created an unsafe environment for another student. I mean, it was like, was it Arlington? I hate to misname the school. Arlington, where the kid brought a gun to school with extra magazines and they were going to just send him right back without. And the parents were like, what do you mean you're going to send him back? So you have a right to an education, but there are alternatives and other kids have a right to a fair education as well. So with maybe a couple exceptions, because like how serious is the assault? Kids used to fight all the time at school, right? Like, is it a, I don't know. I mean, you know what I mean? Like, if it's like mutual combat, you know, should they, I don't know.
Yeah, but that's where I think that there might not be a exception because right. I've also heard from some people that are having trouble with bullies at school and the school just keeps letting it back in. They keep bullying people. So it might not be in the same person, but like once you have physically assaulted somebody, I think you're out.
Yeah. 80% of you guys agree. GTB, 100% suspension. Candy says suspension, yes. Expulsion, possibly for that school. Because I think that's what the phrase is. I said permanent suspension. I guess the other word for that would be expulsion. Vic said not automatic, but after some sort of review process. Jackie says, I'm okay with automatic permanent suspension policy for certain acts, as long as there is an appeal process that allows them to take the circumstances that led to those acts under consideration. Teenagers have trouble with impulse control as they're maturing. Constant bullying does happen and can lead to someone snapping. And that's a good point. Like, I do think there has to be some process of investigation, but if you start making exceptions here and there, like if someone's bullied to the point where they just snap, I mean, what do you do about a situation like that? Are there punishments for the bullies? Terry Lee said, I said no, but it depends on the severity of the assault and who is assaulted. Kids fight, but assaulting adults is different. However, there are always mitigating factors, so suspensions can be tailored to the circumstances surrounding the actual event. I told you there was this kid who was constantly threatening me. He was like a total loony, and my dad beat him up.
My dad beat him up
outside the school. It was really a traumatizing experience.
Did he get in trouble?
Yeah, my dad got arrested. Oh, no. I mean, my dad's dead now, so I can say. I'm sure, I mean, my dad was like a criminal. So I'm not really, it's not, you know, my dad was not a law-abiding citizen, I think we can say. And definitely an adult should not be beating up a child. But like, he punched him. My dad punched him pushed him against the wall.
He probably deserved it.
He probably deserved it in the school, but... So don't do that, because then you'll go
grounds?
To prison.
Yikes.
Yeah. Anyway, my childhood was quite colorful.
Learn something every day.
My mom was a saint. Okay, we'll get to comments from the live stream. On the income tax, if your income isn't yours, whose is it? Matt says, Washington Democrats are down with OPP, other people's property. Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's funny. JM, once it becomes income, so if you take it before it hits my bank account, it's not income? Right. It's income. It's my property. Just say you're trying to take my property. The Chewy. Oh, my God. If only they could hear themselves. Yeah, I'm just so cracked up by Jamie Peterson's
he's very he was being very Gavin Newsom. You know, Gavin, the more he uses his hands, but the less he knows what he's talking about.
It's because they don't have a plan. They're creating it in their head. Just like,
yeah.
But that's their tactic.
100%.
Distract.
Tina says, the truth is that they don't believe your money is yours. In their world, it belongs to the collective and you shouldn't have that much. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Moon Goddess with a super chat. Okay, I need to be drunk so I can understand. WTF, all these idiots are saying. LOL, sorry, Brandy, but you snorting is freaking hilarious. Did I snort today? Apparently I did.
What day do you not snort?
What's new? on the Dems backtracking on this aircraft tax, Eric Peterson said, read the aircraft tax. This could be like the income tax and come to general aviation where an aircraft costs less than a new car, risking aviators. I am the one using our aircraft to fly emergency supplies to remote areas. Rick, repealing a luxury tax on private jets proves they don't actually believe anything they're saying about the state budget situation. Bill, the plan is to break the state as fast as legally possible. It's working. on the school's outrageous civics quiz on politics, Poe says, oh, I think we can figure out who wrote this assignment. Yeah, some wild, crazy teacher wrote this assignment. Weisscastle, quality leering at its finest. Yeah, I'm just trying to help you all leer more.
Leer more.
On the Facebook censorship, which is honestly the only Facebook censorship I have received since Facebook admitted that it was kind of deplatforming or thwarting conservative accounts. Necro Two Shoes says, before these politicians get involved in the internet, it was an open sharing of information. It was beautiful. Now it's garbage. I even, in my desperation, tagged Mark Zuckerberg on X. So I was like, Mark, please help me. I'm just a small business owner.
You know, I'm all for it. Sometimes I think that Elon should crack down on the porn, because there is stuff that shows up in your feed unintentionally and it's disturbing.
Because, like, let's say you watch some sort of video that has some any level of, like, and it's newsworthy or whatever, and then all of a sudden your feed's porn. Yeah. Porn.
And then you're on the plane and you're like, oh God. When you're sitting in the middle seat, that happened. Oh, yeah. It was when I think it was Kanye.
Yes. Oh my God. Kanye. Yeah. Good point.
But anyway, but yeah, I think that those things are okay, but this is newsworthy.
Yeah.
This is ridiculous that not everybody is showing something like this happened.
I get why AI would flag it, but upon a manual review, it should be clear that this is a news
event.
There's
no faces. We're very careful about that. There were no faces.
Yeah. So. On the Teen Center getting taxpayer funds for STI testing for queer youth, Nancy says, didn't the health department do that for free? I'm sure, but then they can't get them into Oasis in their grasp.
Planned Parenthood does.
Oh, this is funny. Milkman says, Oasis or away, sis? Get it? Oasis gender. Nibuya Music. It's about normalizing grooming. They will not stop escalating the level of weirdness and straight pedo stuff till it's considered normal. Mm-hmm. Just can't let that continue anymore. Fit in a couple super chats here. Old Sub Sailor, thanks to Undivided for all your hard work and continuing to fight the good fight. Moon Goddess, it's how they successfully steal kids from their parents. If CPS fails, they have been doing this for decades. Brainwash the kids against the parents. And then Little Miss J asks you, Nicole, was your dad like Brandy's? No. No, he's a very nice, normal man.
He just builds stuff.
He's a sweet guy.
He's a good guy.
All right. Nicole, thanks.
I'm sure he got in a fight in high school or something.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I'm sure today he'd punch a guy in the face for Nicole.
Probably.
But he would probably be an adult.
Yeah.
Yeah. Adult on an adult violence. All right, Nicole, thank you. We'll get to our closing sanity check. A compliment from a Democratic governor about Donald Trump. Wow. First, if you're a small to mid-sized landlord in the state of Washington, consider becoming a member of the Rental Housing Association of Washington. There's a ton of policy conversations around housing happening in Olympia, and they are your voice in a state where you probably feel like you have very few advocates. RHA is that advocate, and by becoming a member, not only are you supporting their work down in Olympia to try to stop bad housing policy, but they can also help you on a one-on-one basis as you're struggling to keep up with changing rules and regulations. So it's just a really good team to have in your corner. So rhawa.org to check out what events they have happening around the state, and then to find out how you can become a member. RHAWA.org, Washington's trusted resource, empowering housing providers. And with that, let's get to our closing sanity check. All right, Michigan Governor Gretchen Whitmer gave her, I crack up when I listen to her speak in any sort of long setting, because it does remind me of like how people speak from Minnesota, where I'm from. Mm-hmm. Like, she has such a Minnesota, Michigan, twang. Wisconsin twang. Mm-hmm. Anyway, she gave her state of the state address and actually said something nice about Donald Trump.
A new fire mission is coming to Selfridge Air National Guard Base in Macomb County. Probably not on the bingo card, but I want to thank President Trump for his work on this.
Oh, that's nice. And some of the Democrats didn't stand back up. They stood up for the for it coming back.
Right.
And then they didn't stand up when she thanked Trump. But she also talked about all the investments and new factories opening in Michigan. And that is in part because of President Trump's America First policy. So if you like it, maybe you're America First. Maybe you're MAGA after all, Gretchen. That has been our closing sanity check. That has been today's episode of Undivided. Thank you for joining us for live shows this week. We will have a new edition of Sundays with Subscribers coming up on Sunday. A lot of other stuff in the meantime. Lots going on. Let me know if you see me on Facebook or if I'm shadow banned. I'm trying hard. Mark Zuckerberg, don't shadow ban me. Please, sir. Please. If you'd like to support our show, in case we ever get kicked off Facebook, go to undividedpod.com, undividedpod.com. Click on the banner that says support the show. It's just $5 a month. I think that's a pretty good deal to help support independent reporting and journalism and the work that we do here on the show to bring back a little sanity to a state that has so little. And Joe Fitzgibbon showed up to a budget hearing drunk. I'm sure we'll talk a lot more about that next week. Crazy. See you then. Nicole, anything? You want to say anything to everybody?
I'm good.
Oh, well, she hates
you. Happy weekend.
No, she hates you. She doesn't even like you.